Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, folks, and welcome to Radio for Your Mind this great Monday morning. And, you know, I've been out already. I was at the harbor drinking coffee, eating a little bit of... I've changed my routine a little bit, you know, because I'm on this focus of dropping down my weight, managing my metabolism, so I'm constantly riding my bike. And I went by this morning at the harbor and had some coffee and prepared for the radio show and had a little bowl of cheese grits and ham, and then I was on the bike focusing, driving home where I was going. I'll be on my bike at least once, maybe twice more today, riding around the island, enjoying life and listening to some positive stuff. But, you know, I'm excited because yesterday was Mother's Day. Now, Saturday was my mom's birthday, so she got a double whammy. She had her birthday on Saturday and then Mother's Day yesterday. But this is the first year Paige and I have been married now 24 years. And seriously, this is the first time I have not planned Mother's Day. My two girls, my 17-year-old and my 16-year-old, or wait a minute, my 16-year-old and my 15-year-old, I'll get it right, did the whole thing. They made up a custom chicken salad, and they made some pasta salad, and they made a wonderful cold drinks, non-alcoholic, but just, man, they were just awesome, very refreshing. We put all this in the cooler and the picnic basket and got the grandbabies and Dalton and Dylan, and we headed out to Eden State Gardens. I'll put some pictures up later today over on Facebook, but we went out to Eden State Gardens and just had a phenomenal afternoon walking the trails, looking at the flowers, playing with the kids, and then came back here and gave Mama her gifts and everything. And then the girls had made an awesome dessert, some kind of a frozen banana split that was just out of this world. And then Paige just relaxed the rest of the afternoon. Her and I watched The Tourist with Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp last night. That's a great movie. Y'all will have it. It's fun. And just had a wonderful time. You know, it was a relaxing time to celebrate mothers. And I hope all of you that had moms got to do that. Today, we are in Chapter 25 of Howard Schultz's book, Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul. I got an email last Friday from somebody that said, Troy, when are you going to do something new? This is boring. And it was kind of humorous because I thought, man, boring sometimes is good. Now, I don't find this boring at all. I find it intriguing that a $10 billion business fought for its life without losing its soul. I mean, that's so counter Wall Street. And here's somebody that just rips away the Wall Street persona and says, you know what, we're all human and we got to act that way. And that's how this business is. It reminds me of network marketing so much, and today especially because it says Plan B. Now, how many times do we hear about having a Plan B? And you know, it's funny, as we read through this chapter, you're going to find that I'm going to touch some nerves, because I've always hated that. The Marine Corps never had a Plan B. We just had a plan, period. So I had to learn what this Plan B crap was when I got out here. It's like, okay, if you got a Plan B, then you're giving yourself a way out, aren't you? You know, if in the back of your mind, okay, I got this Plan B over here. If this doesn't work, I got Plan B. That don't make any sense. Or the concept of, well, network marketing is my Plan B. Well, why isn't it your Plan A? I mean, it's humorous. But let's get into this. I could rabbit trail that puppy all day long. So here's how Howard and Joanne start this chapter. Starbucks' mission from the beginning was to build a different kind of company, one that would achieve a healthy balance between profit and social conscience. Never had the earnings side of the equation been more in jeopardy than the fall of 2008. Now, we all went through stuff, and we still are to a certain degree. Some of them still in bankruptcy, some still wondering about their real estate, all that garbage. You know, but listen to this as we move into this, because there's a lot to cover today. And I know it's tough on a Monday morning. You're waking up, getting back to the grind, but this is important. Listen to this. For Starbucks' fourth quarter ending September, profits had plunged 97% to $4.5 million. For the year, earnings were down 53% to 360 316 million. While the drops included a $105 million one-time write-off, without those charges, the company still was 4 cents shy of earnings. Now, they weren't the only ones. Everybody was going through this, guys. It was huge. It's what Starbucks does during this period that sets them apart. So many companies in the last 3-4 years have denied there was a problem until it was too late. That didn't happen here. And the reason that I don't think it happened at Starbucks is because from early on, Howard saw the issue, the board of directors saw the issue, and everybody wanted to fix the issue, not cast blame. See, that's the key. You don't cast blame, you fix the issue. Howard writes here, Starbucks board of directors had steered us to prepare for the worst and in an unprecedented request had asked the leadership team to financially model what would happen if our comparative store sales dropped to a negative 15 or a negative 20%. Now, store comps were down, but what would happen if you went down 20%? That's big. Now, some people in the direct selling realm, some people just in world in general, the metaphysical, wacko, weirdo, you know, attraction type people, and yes, I know I'm stepping on your toes, but listen. The board of directors weren't worried about attracting negativism. They weren't worried about attracting, oh my God. What they wanted to know is what if, because if you know the what if you know exactly here's what could happen, guess what? Now you can fix the issue so you never have that what if happen. You change everything in your control. See, this is where positiveness meets realism. And with a rock-solid board of directors, not at a corporate level. Now listen to me. Everything I try to do, I want to bring down to the personal level. You, as the individual, I don't care if you're the CEO of the company, if you're a brand-new rep in a company, if you're just starting out as an entrepreneur trying to start your own brick-and-mortar business, you need to have a personal board of directors. Every Thursday, I meet with my board of directors. We have an accountability meeting. We share. There's things that we share about that our wives usually don't know why we're going through it until we come out the other side, good or bad. It's our board of directors. In my case, it's all men that I can trust, that trust me. In some cases, it may be a mixture if you're doing this from a business standpoint, but you need this. Howard writes, the exercise alone spoke to our dire straits, and once we ran the numbers, it was immediately apparent that should sales fall to those levels, Starbucks Coffee Company would be in very, very big trouble. See, if you don't know what you don't know, then you don't know it. But if you don't know something and you find out, now you can fix it. See, that's the key. The media lately has been hyping on the fact that the Night Stalkers lost one of their choppers when they went and took their SEALs in to get bin Laden. And that's all they seem to... Oh, they left their tail behind. Oh my gosh, their tail was exposed. You know what? Who the freaking cares? You know what the Night Stalkers are doing? They're saying, okay, we did this. Here's what we did. What went wrong? Now let's fix it so it never happens again. See, it's not about the failure or the perceived failure or the what-if failure. It's about knowing if this happens, there could be failure. Let's fix it now. Kind of cracks me up because for so many years, that crappy myth that's out there, don't major in the small things, brought more companies down and brought more relationships down and brought more people to failure than you can shake a stick at. Just burns my butt to no end. When people out here want to say things that make no cotton-picking sense, you better be majoring in the minor things. You better be focusing in on the what-if so you can fix it. Pure and simple, Howard writes, our earnings would decline even faster than the rate of our sales, so they had to fix it. They had to go deep with the cuts. They had the directive, fix it, by a board of directors who cared. Not a board of directors that said, Howard, you screwed up. You didn't make it. It's going on a year. You're out of here. Mm-mm. A board of directors that said, we see what you're doing. Now you know the worst case scenario. Now you know what to focus on. Fix it. That was the key. They'd already cut approximately $205 million from the budget, but they had to find more waste. It wasn't about cutting jobs. It's about finding the waste. This goes back to what I said a minute ago. If you do not major in the small things, the big issues will never take place. It's the minor flaws. Now, look, I can track this to Enron. I can track it to WorldCom. I can track it to the United States government at every branch of service. It's the small things. I call them ethical infractions. See, when there's an ethical flaw, when there's a fracture in your character, corporate or otherwise, it allows for that seepage to get in there. I remember taking a trip to Canada when I was a young teen. And as I was looking out the window, as my dad drove down the car between Banff and I don't know where we're going, Lake Elizabeth or something up there, I couldn't tell you. But we're sitting here, Jasper, Alberta, and Banff. We're going in between there, and I'm watching this little creek. Just a little stream, folks, right there beside the road, and all of a sudden it just disappeared. I mean, we're driving and it just disappears. I said, Dad, stop. He said, what? And I said, that creek just disappeared. He said, well, hang on, son, there's a turnoff up here. Let's just turn up here. It's just a few feet and you can get out and see what happened. Take a picture. He pulls in and we get out. It's an overlook. That little creek that was just there beside the road had found a crack in the earth. And over, I don't know, hundreds, thousands of years, it had made not just found a crack, but now it had created a cavern. You know, water is the most powerful element in the universe. And now you see it on the top of the ground, but now it went down so deep that you couldn't even see it in some places because it had broken into the rock that far down. In some cases, it had shattered. The pressure had broken the rock out, and it was wider. I mean, in a lot of places, you could just walk over. But in a few places, it was wider. I mean, seriously wider, and they put stair steps down so you could see what had happened. Folks, that's the picture of what happens when you don't realize where you're going because you don't want to. You got this freaking blind eye crap. You got this, okay, I'm just going to think positive thoughts. No, you got to take proactive action. Is what you have to do. Howard says this. He goes, we worked furiously. We looked for ways to reduce our cost structure. The challenge was as much emotional as it was financial as we asked ourselves how to eliminate spending in ways that were not consumer-facing and wouldn't subtly fracture the culture and the values of our company. Finding a balance. This is the key. Finding a balance between Starbucks' fiscal responsibilities and our responsibilities to live up to our partner's expectation was more of an art than science, an ongoing struggle that prompted debate almost every time we sat down to talk about specific cuts. It is emotional. The world has changed. Maybe it was 9/11. Maybe it was before that. Maybe it was this economic downturn. I don't know. All I know is that the world's changed from the top to the bottom, and people at all levels realize we can't fake it anymore. This is emotional. It isn't just about numbers on a doggone spreadsheet. And you can take this one to the bank. Those companies that do not want to wake up and understand that it's an emotional deal, that cutting costs, finding profits, making the company profitable, if they don't understand, it's emotional. It's about human connection along with those numbers, and they don't understand. Because the only way to get profitability anywhere, in your personal little business at home, in corporate America, in your organization nationwide, internationally, is emotional human connection. And if you don't have that, your system will never grow. sadly. Most direct sellers don't understand that. Most company CEOs yet don't understand that. We preach it a lot, but we don't get it. And it's become even fractured these days more so because so many people have gotten hurt because of the hype and the rhetoric and the professional brokers that have come in to broker deals that the emotional human connection side has gone by the wayside. I'm telling you, if you go and read this book, if you put it to your top leaders, as CEOs, if you buy it for your team and you start to understand what Starbucks had to figure out, you'll save your company, I think. But if you're not willing to learn from one of the most successful brands in history, you may become just like the Roman Empire. You may be the largest and the best, and you'll crumble internally and be gone, and people won't hardly remember you except for some old broken buildings here and there. I get emotional with this, folks. I'm sick and tired of seeing people fail. Starbucks knew where they had something that they could work on. And Howard writes this. He said, when it came to our back-end infrastructure, however, although Starbucks had never been a lavish operation, just relatively underdisciplined, we quickly identified low-hanging fruit that we had never gone after in a lasting or meaningful way. In SCO, Peter's due diligence revealed the operating costs, the day-to-day expenses incurred, in running the supply chain was exploding by $100 million a year, a runaway expense he subsequently referred to as the supertanker, that he insisted by stopping it in its tracks by January of 2009, he'd save the company money. He further committed to reducing manufacturing and logistics costs by $25 million and finding another $75 million in procurement savings, $100 million he felt just in one division of the company he'd wipe off the books just by putting together some pretty good due diligence and putting in some processes that would work. And we've read about Peter already. It's pretty simple on what his philosophy is. See, this is the kicker, folks. If you're not looking, you don't see. When we're riding high, when we're out there being greedy, when we're living the high life, we miss it. Paige and I have a philosophy. We get it from the Bible. It says everything lasts for a season. And since we don't know what that season is, we live a very conservative life. We live such a conservative life that it humors me, but a lot of people think we don't make very much money. You know, we don't make a lot of money compared to other folks. But we work pretty smart, not just hard, but smart. We don't get caught up in the grind and the ritter. Even living here on an island where the real estate boom was nuts, I'd watch people buy pre-construction condos for $500,000, sell them still at pre-construction prices at $1.5 million. Sadly, some of them got stuck with a lot of property when the bubble burst. But we just kind of keep plugging along, raising our kids, having fun, loving life, loving God. We didn't get that way overnight. We learned some hard lessons along the way. We all have to go through that. The kicker is, are you wanting to learn them now or do you want to learn it when it's too late? If you're a CEO, do you want to learn it now or do you want to wait till your company's about to go into bankruptcy? If you're a leader, do you want to learn it now or wait till after your team's been raided and everybody's gone? Wouldn't it make smart sense that we get to it now? What do you need to change? What do you need to cut? You guys have heard me say this. My mentor, Richard Brooks, the founder and CEO of 2110, the CEO of OxyFresh, he says successful network marketers are two weeks from being broke if they lose their commission check. No different than the average American working corporate America. We like to talk about the lifestyle. We never want to talk about life change. Lifestyles come and go. Some of the most successful men and women in history have been dead busted, broke, rich, dead busted, broke, rich, dead busted, broke, rich. To me, that lifestyle sucks. Let's make some life change so we can just be out there living life. What made this so unique is the fact that this board of directors understood what Howard was going through. You want to know why? I'm going to share with you just a few of the board members that went through this with him. This is why they understood it. There was Barbara Bass. She'd been with the board since 1996. She was the president of a foundation. She was leading an organization of her own. There's Bill Bradley, managing director of Allen and Company. An investment banker, he saw what other companies were going through. He was learning, and he knew what he had to do. There was Melody Hobson. She was the president and director of Ariel Investments, another management company that could see what was happening. She also sat on the board of directors at DreamWorks and Estee Lauder. There was Olden Lee. He'd been with them since 2003. He'd worked for 28 years with PepsiCo, Taco Bell, KFC. He understood retail sales. Jamie Sheenan, general partner of Trinity Ventures, a venture capitalist firm. They were seeing what was going wrong. He'd been with P.F. Chang's. There was Jarville Terrell. I can't pronounce it totally. He'd been the vice chairman of Colgate-Palmolive. He understood what was going on. There was Mike Ehrman. He was executive CEO of JCPenney's at the time. There was Craig Weatherup, 9-year board member who'd been CEO of PepsiCo Worldwide. These were for the most part, former CEOs and top executives, now board members that were saying, Howard, we love you. We're in. Okay, we know that it's going to work. Let's use our collective experience to make it happen. The collective experience of guys and gals who had been where he was at. You surround yourself with just a bunch of pompous people, a bunch of yes sir, yes ma'am, all that crap, you're never going to get anywhere. But when you come together and say, you know what, we know we've got some flaws we need to fix. We know that we want to live up to our heritage, but we got to go forward in some new stuff. It's the only way to make it happen. Now, here's the cool part, and this is where we're going to get into the last 7-8 minutes of the show. This is the rocking part right here. Howard says, not only did I have the board, but I had my personal friends. And although I never stopped believing that Starbucks would emerge from the darkness, I was nevertheless experiencing an emotional roller coaster daily. I tried, admittedly, not always successfully, to keep my feelings in check when interacting with our partners. I was acutely aware of my mood domino effect, and first and foremost, our people needed reassurance of my own confidence. That's why the freedom I felt to be candid with the board members and my trusted friends provided a psychological benefit, as it was educational. One of the things that I enjoy in the position that I wield inside of the direct selling niche and a lot inside of some nonprofit organizations is I have the ability to have CEOs come to me, to have top leaders come to me, to even have regular average everyday distributors come to me, knowing I will not break their confidence, to share with me what they're going through and for me to give them some outside advice of how to fix where they're at. Some CEOs and top leaders realize that. And not only do we have a friendship, but we actually have a working relationship. Distributors, for the most part, don't pay anything because they're really searching for an answer. Just their love and their Facebook kudos, that's cool. But when you don't break somebody's trust, even when competitors come to you, you're able to give a third-party analysis that helps them both and sometimes stay out of court. Howard went to people that he knew he could talk to without pushing that frustration he had. But Starbucks' executive team went back to the board and they said, here's what our plan B is. We're gonna cut some costs. Here's what we can do. We know that if we focus hard enough, we can cut a boatload of money off the bottom line. Now, Starbucks wasn't the only one hurting at the time. I was buying Ford stock at $1.80. Circuit City, I bought them at 50 cents, and they went bankrupt. I mean, it was done. I lost all my money in them. We know that the General Motors stock was down to $2.92, lowest it'd been since World War II. So it wasn't that they were all by themselves. They were just doing something to fix it. Didn't need a handout. Didn't need a bailout. So when Howard and the team took it to the board said, you don't have a plan B. These cost cuts that you're showing us, that's your plan A, dude. All of a sudden, a light bulb went off in my head, folks. You should never have a plan B. I don't care what guru you talk to. I got great friends that will tell you, have a plan B. I've got good friends who wrote books about plan B. If you always have a plan B, you'll never focus on your plan A. So if your plan A is not working, your plan B better have just become your plan A. You better have done the due diligence, the realistic focus. You better know what you're doing wrong, know what you need to cut, know what you need to enhance, what training you need, who do you need to trust, what board of directors to put together. And that better become your plan A. And if it is, you'll make it. I've got a man that I have not had the privilege yet of meeting, but I've reviewed his company, talked about his company, talked about him. I'm not going to give you his name. I'm just going to share something with you. His company products, his brand, everything he does is top-notch, A+. It's not Beamer either, by the way. I just had an IM come in. This company was not overly conservative, but not overly flashy. I mean, they just wanted to put products out, and they were doing, I mean, hundreds of millions a year in sales, still are. But he saw a trend coming, and I've reported on this. So he went out and he called a few people and he put a board of directors together. He called some former distributors that had been with him. One of them, a really good friend of mine, she's a female that's just a dynamic leader. And he said, here's what I want to do. I don't want to bring this into my current company. I want to start a sister company. Because I see this coming on strong. And I want a new opportunity for our people. I know people today want multiple streams of income, so I want to give it to them, and I want to give them something that everybody's going to buy, everybody's going to be a part of, everybody's going to do it. And he's launched a brand new brand in the coffee industry. I just thought that was great. Now, I've been a little cautious because most of the coffee companies putting out instant coffee, but they were putting out low-end instant coffee. Starbucks brings out an instant coffee, and all of a sudden it raises the standard. It's not the old Senka that Grandpa used to drink. Some good quality stuff. And then I've got another company we're going to review that actually is a direct selling arm. They got their own roaster. Matter of fact, the CEO of that company grew up just a couple blocks from where Howard did over in New York. Folks, it doesn't matter what your company is. It doesn't matter what your product is. It doesn't matter what matters is you. You are number one. And if you get your act together, that will permeate through your team. And all of a sudden, that plan B will be your plan A, and you won't have to worry about anything except one thing, and that's the title of tomorrow's chapter, Sustain Support. Folks, I appreciate every one of you. I appreciate your feedback. I appreciate you hanging out with us. You know, if there's anything that we can do, if there's a book you want us to do on the radio show, you let us know. But until then, live life like it's an epic adventure. I'll see you at the top. Be back here tomorrow morning with us on Radio for Your Mind. Bye now.